Hello and welcome to Behind Health Statistic. My name is Ricky Hellier and I'm a lecturer at Cardiff University School of Healthcare Sciences. In this episode, we're going to have a little bit of a change, and instead of talking about service users, we're going to be talking to a service provider. And in this instance, my colleague Diana D will be talking to Richard Dazier, who's a Director of Primary Care, Community and Intermediate Care at Cardiff and Vale University Health Board. Within the discussion, Richard talks about his career, both within the context of being a man and being black. Of roughly around about 730,000 professionals on the NMC register, around about 11% of people identify as being male, and around about 22% of people declare themselves as being black, Asian, or from an ethnic minority. Rich and Diana talk about how he came into nursing, the challenges nurses can face, including gender bias and racism, as well as vaccination take-up. So now over to Diana and Richard.
So good morning, Richard. Thank you for joining us today. I'm going to introduce myself as Diana D. I'm one of the adult team members from the School of Healthcare Science, and I'm one of the senior lecturers within Cardiff University, and I'm on the nursing programme. So thank you for joining us again. And we've just got some questions that I'm sure our listeners would like to hear. So for the benefit of those listeners, could you just introduce yourself and just tell us what your current role is?
Good morning, Diana. My name's Richard Dazier. I'm a registered nurse, and I am currently the Director of Nursing for the Primary Care, Intermediate Care and Community Care Services within the Cardiff and Vale University Health Board. So it's a position I've held since middle of 2020, and so I took on that role in the middle of COVID. Wow. But prior to that, I've held a number of roles within nursing, within England and Wales, and I've worked within the NHS settings, for nearly 35 years now.
So I'm looking forward to hearing your story. So hopefully some of those experiences will come out as we're chatting away this morning. So let's go back then. So can you tell us a little bit about your childhood, your family, your home environment, where you grew up then, Richard?
Diana, I'm the son of parents who came to the UK shores, like a number of black parents came to the UK shores in the 1950s and the 1960s. They were invited from the Commonwealth to work and to restore the UK after the Second World War. And they helped transform the UK, most notably working in public sector organisations. So I'm one of four brothers. We were born within 6 years of each other. And so my parents had quite a difficult time with four boys growing up in Manchester in the north of England. And I was really surrounded, and my mother was really surrounded by boys throughout her life, really, a husband and four boys. But she was truly the matriarch. She led with what I would say was a quiet authority, loving, caring, a feeder, very supportive, etc. She held a number of roles, but most notably she was a carer, and she held a very prominent role as a carer with the learning difficulties arena within the Manchester Social Services.
I thought it was a Mancunian accent. It's nice to hear the Northern accent. I'm from Cumbria, so it's nice to hear the Northern accent.
Oh, yes, yes. I've been in South Wales now since 2006 now, so, and I've never had that Manchester accent stays with you, really. And my father was a tailor. He was he's a brilliant tailor. He was very skilled in the art of laying mosaics. He was really, really quite detailed practitioner. But really, the the focus of our family life really was led really by my mother. As I said, she was the matriarch. She led with that quiet authority, and she kept us on a straight and narrow as we grew up in Manchester in the 70s and the 80s.
So when did you decide you wanted to be a nurse, and who was your influence? Was your mum your influence, or was there any other inspiration or motivation behind your thoughts? Or did you not want to be a nurse? What was your initial kind of thoughts about career-wise?
I actually came into nursing by accident.
Right.
When I was around 14, 15, I sustained a fracture of both my ulna and radius. Prior to that, I'd never really entered a hospital setting. Not that I can remember. But as a result of sustaining what was quite a bad fracture, I attended the local emergency department. And as part of that treatment and care, I was just really in awe of really the sounds and the smells of that hospital environment, in awe of the individuals involved, doctors, the radiographers, but really the nurses, because they led really. They managed that facility. You know, they knew who was coming in. They triaged, they prioritised, and I was just taken aback, really. But also at the same time, I saw male nurses. So my probably very stereotypical view of nursing at that time as a young man was really based on females caring for sick patients in a inpatient ward environment. That was a catalyst of my interest. And really as part of my recuperation, because I wasn't able to undertake any sporting activity, my mother asked me to not to feel too sorry for myself and to help her with some of her clients.
Right.
As a volunteer. And so I helped to volunteer with her as a carer to support individual adults with learning difficulties within the Manchester arena. And I realised that not only was my mother a very kind and compassionate and caring woman for the boys, for myself and my brothers, but this was also extended in her role. And it wasn't just a job, it was something that she did. I was in awe of the nurses and the radiographers and the doctors in ED, but I saw something different here. I saw
so much more.
So the catalyst was an accident, and then the recuperation and getting involved in voluntary work. And that led me to start thinking of pursuing a career in nursing. And initially I applied for a career in learning difficulties. But my mother said to me, you know, cast your net a bit further and also look for adult nursing as well. So I did. And the only reason I ended up in the field of adult nursing was because I was interviewed first for that position.
Right.
And I said yes. And it also happened to be my local school of nursing.
I think that voluntary work provided you with some good insight and the fundamental skills, isn't it? It sounds like.
Yeah, it's absolutely invaluable that to get a flavour of whether you want to enter a career, it's useful to actually step into the shoes of those who are providing care, or at least you can actually view care being delivered. So yes, and I knew really quite quickly that I wanted to enter the world of professional nursing.
Brilliant, brilliant. So during that time, did you get any stick from anyone, your brothers, or was there any kind of negativity about your choice of career or any resistance from anyone in your community or wider?
There is a stereotype, and that stereotype exists today. The stereotype of that existed in 1986 when I joined as a student nurse really exists today, especially in the Black and Asian and minority ethnic populations. There is an association that you are of a that you are homosexual or that you're not masculine enough, and there's also a stereotypical perception actually from others really. Mm-hmm. That males are not as caring and not as nurturing and not as supportive. And that's so untrue. You know,
there's a lot of myths, isn't there, and gender bias within the profession, isn't there?
Absolutely.
And, you know, we are trying to change that, isn't it? We've had some publications like Bloomsbury have got a book out, My Daddy is a Nurse. So we're trying to destigmatize a lot of that. But as you say, that we've still got a bit of work to do, isn't it?
Yeah,
so was there many people like you then on during your training then? Could you?
When I trained in 1986, we were warmly welcomed as male nurses. So there were five in my cohort of 30, which was actually really unusual. But there was only one black male, and so I was a rarity. Then, and I'm a rarity now. So we were warmly welcomed, but I think there was an overriding view that men entered the nursing profession as a career, where females entered it because they were truly altruistic, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. However, it was very clear when I entered professional nursing that although there were a small number of males in nursing, there were a disproportionate of males in those senior and lead nurse positions. And so it was, in some ways, you could understand why the vast majority of the nursing profession felt that males went into nursing solely because of a career focus. But as I said, men can be equally as nurturing and supportive and caring and compassionate as our female colleagues.
And we've got to move away from that homogenous stigma, isn't it? So you mentioned that, you know, you were kind of under the spotlight really, and you still are, as you said. So how do you cope with that?
I think dealing with that's partly largely about resilience, really, and there's probably a couple of approaches that I've always used. Really, one is you ignore it, because actually sometimes it's quite tiring to to respond to negative comments, or you call it out as it happens, or you respond at a later date. But I think because there was always comments from the community, from other nurses, you become quite resilient, you become quite strong, and you automatically develop a very strong skill set of when you feel it's appropriate to respond. So I don't call it out for every issue, and nor is it appropriate to do so.
No, with dignity, isn't it?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, and I think you've highlighted a number of things that that have come out more recently. You know, our population demographics at the time are changing all the time in multicultural Britain. But we've also been reminded more recently through the Black Lives Matters movement that structural inequalities do exist and racial discrimination, as you say, is very real. And we know within the NHS that, you know, up to 19% of our workforce is actually made up from those from Black and minority ethnic communities. However, only 8% of NHS managers are, you know, from those communities. And, you know, that's been highlighted before in the Snowy White Peaks report. But, you know, your testament of you know, this game, you're a game changer almost, isn't it? And that you are, you know, a change agent, really, isn't it? So hopefully we'll see those statistics change in the future going forward. But I think you've really highlighted some good points about resilience as well, because that's what we're trying to bolster more within the workforce with the demands that are placed on our workforce at the moment, isn't it? So thank you for answering those last two questions, because they were quite sensitive. So I appreciate your honesty in sharing some of that. And it can't be easy or to talk about things like that, but we do need to hear it. And I think it's creating, it's about all about creating those conversations, isn't it? And doing podcasts like such, we need to create more open dialogue about race and structural inequality and gender biases and things like that. So that's really brilliant. But what would be your key messages then to those who are listening and perhaps experiencing some of those microaggressions or hostility or negativity based on some of their protected characteristics?
It's a strange word, I believe, microaggression, because it's aggression. And how do I deal with it? Well, I think for a very long, long time, Diana, I was very passive. And I think largely because I was told to be passive. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, as I said, and there was real overt racism. And it's clear that that certainly had an impact on my life as growing up. And it still has an impact on my life, even if it's not directed at me. You know, I see things like you've made reference to George Floyd. There's significant reference to COVID-19 and how that's disproportionately affected the Black and Asian minority ethnic groups. And also it's, and when you see things on the TV, that does affect you. So to really answer your question, for a long time I didn't respond to what was overt racism. I didn't. I just found it too draining, found it too tiring. And I didn't know how to escalate. And when you did escalate, it never really went anywhere. But now I do call it out. I do, whether that's immediately or whether that's a bit delayed, but there's always a timing on your delay, you know. So if you see it and it happens, I do think it's important that you tell your story, you share your story, you share your feelings, and I encourage others to share their experiences at the same time. So I think it's a significant move between being passive and actually calling it out. So that's how I deal with it. And I think it's probably made it more pertinent for me because for two reasons. One, I am in a senior position, and although I've excelled in my career, I think it's important just to note, Diana, that there've been real obstacles along the way. I've had an amazing career, but there've been some obstacles. But two things really. One is I am in a senior role, so I should share my experience of how to deal with microaggression. But also, I have a responsibility outside of nursing. I have a responsibility to my community. So my 15-year-old son was a victim of a very vile racist online abuse late in the middle of last year. And so it's my duty, not only, and I had to support him, and it went to a criminal investigation. And I had to support him. So I have to be strong. And not only for nursing, not only for myself, but for my family and for the wider community. So dealing with microaggression, we cannot do what I did when I first started, when I was a young man, and I was afraid, I was scared to speak up. You've got to call it out. And these podcasts provide a real vehicle to share our lived experience.
Been a difficult time, but as the director of nursing in Wales, in one of Wales's largest hospitals, I'm sure you're a fantastic role model to your community, to your son, to your family, and I'm sure they're very, very proud of you. There's no doubt about that. But with such a role comes a lot of responsibility and lots of pressure, I'm sure. So do you ever experience imposter syndrome? Something that comes across at the moment, isn't it?
Yes, I do. I think there's two elements to imposter syndrome. One is sometimes you're surrounded, especially when you're new. So I'm new in this director of nursing post. So I will sit around the table with other senior people. And because I'm new, I think, oh my God, I'm not sure I'm worthy to be in the position of these other people around the table. And that's partly because of knowledge and their skills and experience. But there's also another part, and that's also because I do strive to perfection. So when you're in the novice period, as I am at the moment, you will have those days where you think, actually, I don't know all that I should know. But then again, I also reflect and think, in these positions, you can't know it all.
And that's okay, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
We've got to have a cultural shift, isn't it? That it's okay and we can find out and we can learn, isn't it?
So I think it's actually what I think you have to be brave and actually say and be clear that we all have these times where we have these imposter syndromes. And some of it's reinforced by also some stereotypes as well attached to imposter syndrome, which is, there's a view, a quite a widely held view, whereby some who are actually promoted. In this case, myself, are promoted because it's a tokenistic gesture, i.e. We need to see more people who are different. So that's the other side of the imposter syndrome coin.
That can sometimes add to it almost, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
And so you have to prove yourself even more so.
Sometimes I wake up and I think, right, okay, so it's about making sure and telling people. And sometimes actually I find myself having to tell people my role as opposed to just doing the role, because that's the element of the imposter syndrome and also feeling that you want to inform people and engage people that you've not entered this position because of a quota, but you're in this position because you're the right person for that job.
So tell me then, what's your biggest achievement and proudest moment of your career to date? Or there might be many, there might be a few.
I've had an amazing career, as I said, and there's been some obstacles, but by and large, it's been an absolute honour and a privilege to serve my population, both in England and Wales. So lots of achievements. Most of my achievements are really ones that I actually believe are those that affect patient care and that affect the wider system and also change nursing practice. I think I've got probably a few examples, but the one that really comes to mind is a piece of work that I led in one of my older organisations, and now in Bevan Health Board, where as a divisional nurse, we identified concerns raised by families in relation to patients being discharged from inpatient areas into a residential care setting. Concerns about lack of communication, lack of preparation, lack of guidance. And at the same time, nurses were also felt lack of support in relation to supporting really what were a group of elderly, frail patients who were hospitalised, and it was deemed that they could not return back to their own homes because of conditions such as a stroke, for example. So they would need care which could not be delivered in their own home. And at the same time, we had some real problems in the number of patients waiting in hospital for a placement in residential care settings. So in short, Diana, what I did was that I led a group of individuals from both the local authority patient groups and also doctors and nurses within the hospital setting. And we devised a very clear pathway and a process that streamlined and gave clear communication to both families, to doctors, nurses, social workers, to ensure that there was a smooth transaction of support and care for individuals who were hospitalised, moving into a residential care setting. And at the same time, and the outcome of that was it was agreed by both local authority and health board. Got recognised as one of the Royal Colleges of part of the Royal College of Nursing finalists for the Nurse of the Year.
Oh, brilliant!
That work was acknowledged
and recognised, isn't it? And I think it's the key that what you've just said. It's all about clear communication, isn't it?
Yes.
And it goes miles, doesn't it?
Yeah. And there are other examples. You know, some of them are, and some of it really relates to some of the work that I'm doing now. Which relates to, I'm really keen to engage and to improve, and really to see a change in the diversity within nursing and midwifery. And so at the moment, I'm heavily involved in the Race Equality Action Plan Steering Group, which will develop a Race Equality Action Plan for hopefully the Easter time of this year. And I was involved in the First Minister's COVID-19 BAME Advisory Group. So I'm really keen to see a change in the cultural mix of nursing.
And I'm aware that you're also involved with the Nursing Now campaign with the RCN as well. So I know we had some correspondence about that as well. So there's lots happening in Wales, isn't it? So that's really good.
There's an amazing amount of work going on in Wales, and I think it's really timely. It's timely because of Black Lives Matters, or I should say Black and White Lives Matters, because that's the official hashtag, and also because of the issues that were born out of COVID-19. So yes, I've been heavily involved in the issues about inclusion and diversity in nursing, which I think is really refreshing for the profession.
And I'm glad you've mentioned COVID-19, because obviously we've got a vaccination campaign going on at the moment. Have you had your vaccination yet?
I have.
Yeah, so good. I'm glad to hear that. But we know that there are some health disparities in our Black and minority ethnic communities. And, you know, sometimes it's difficult to get them to engage in some of the health mainstream healthcare provisions and screening services. And that could be for various reasons like language, health literacy, health promotion campaigns and the target groups, etc., the marketing, etc., things like cervical, prostate cancer screening, contraceptive advice, blood transfusions is another example, and organ transplantation. And with the COVID vaccine at the moment, there's some of the issues that sometimes we need to have more conversations about. How do you think we can better reach those communities to consider such take up and to have more conversations around this? Such as the vaccine for COVID, and to try and get more of our communities involved in the take-up?
The points you've raised have been known for quite a long time, so it's not just the mass vaccination uptake. There's clearly an information gap here. And in some ways, one of the ways to close that information gap is to understand what information is actually out there and being shared. But I also believe that you need to have a vehicle for that information and a conduit for that information. I was in Boot Town yesterday with our district nursing teams, mm-hmm. and they are really ideally placed to share and to communicate the benefits of screening, the benefits of mass vaccination, the benefits of regular health checks, et cetera, and there's a broader benefit of actually sharing that information, not via our healthcare professionals in those local areas, but also sharing that information from people who look like myself. Because it's clear, there's very clear evidence about role modelling. It's very, very strong.
And it was good, and I think this is really good to hear that you have had the vaccine and that you are, you know, an advocate for it. So I think that's a really good message to get across.
So it's sharing that, but it's also sharing the broader benefits of good health.
Yeah, and the wider community, you know, benefits, isn't it? The impact, isn't it? So, you know, obviously we talked about, you know, health promotion, and I think that's really great. How do you keep yourself fit? How do you keep yourself, your well-being in balance? What, any tips for us?
Main tips. I think really it's just exercise.
Exercise, okay.
Yes, exercise, family, children. Children children always, they're a great diversion because as soon as the children are around, you know, your attention is focused on your children. But I enjoy sport. I've always been sporty, so I take lots of pleasure in being involved in activities. So I do cycle a lot, and I do walk as well. So I do enjoy those acts. So the exercise and family keep me balanced, really, because I think it's important that you have to switch off.
Brilliant. We are coming towards the end then, so we're aware that there's a deficit, and I'm sure you are within your role, we know there's a huge deficit within the nursing workforce. And we obviously need to plan for that. It was very pleasing to hear yesterday that UCAS published figures to say that there's been a more interest in nursing careers and applications to nursing across UK universities has actually increased, which is really good to hear. But it's not going to be resolved as a quick fix, and we need to sustain that growth going forward, don't we? So some of our listeners, no doubt, will be contemplating a career in nursing and healthcare. What would your advice to them be?
Nursing is an excellent career. It's global. It's flexible. You can work in a hospital setting or a primary care setting. It's a career whereby you can. You hold those attributes of being a teacher, an educator, a healer, a friend. I believe there's no greater attribute, there's no greater feeling or than
it's
being
an achievement, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, there is. But actually, there's no greater focus really on helping people. You know. That vocation of helping people is so strong, and I think I've had a rewarding career, met many people, inspirational leaders, friends, etc. But that ability to actually have an impact, a direct impact on people's lives, is absolutely enormous because nurses can affect that. So from a very micro level in terms of helping and supporting. And developing services to a more macro level in how nurses can actually have an impact on some of those broader pledges and initiatives within the NHS. Nurses are actually at the are pivotal because we are the largest unidisciplinary workforce, and we are well positioned to be the patient's advocate and well positioned actually to push forward some of those pledges. So it's an excellent career, and I would absolutely advocate individuals to enter a career in nursing.
Brilliant. And as a nurse and as a woman of colour, I would second that. Nursing has always been very good to me as well, and for all those reasons that you've just said. So thank you ever so much. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
The world of professional nursing is at a pivotal point. It's at a pivotal point because of COVID-19. I think the world of healthcare, the world of social care will change. And that means that nursing will change with it. I also know that the world is keen to embrace the diversity of our population. And so there'll be a significant push to engage with our populations. And by engaging with our populations, that means that nursing will also be engaging with our populations to deliver culturally sensitive care going forward.
Many thanks. Many thanks for taking the time to speak with me today. I'm in awe of what you've achieved, and it's been lovely hearing about your story, and I'm sure you've inspired many others who are listening today. All the best in continuing to break down those barriers and proving, despite some of those adversities, where there's a will, there is a way. So it's been wonderful to share in that journey, and thanks for your honesty, and just thanks for just sharing, you know, the wonderful world of nursing. So thank you.
Thank you, Diana. Take care.
So a huge thank you to Diana and Richard for the conversation there, and a huge thank you to Richard for sharing his experiences with us. If you've got any further interest or been affected by any of the issues raised within the podcast, please look at websites such as Zero Racism Wales, or even down to professional bodies and unions such as Unison and RCN's information on discrimination. Thanks ever so much for listening.